the New South Wales Country Hour with Michael Condon on ABC Radio New South Wales.
Hello again and welcome to the show on this Christmas Eve. Coming up, we hear about the gun bill. A number of the gun restrictions are said to be unworkable for farmers and have unintended consequences. We'll hear from New South Wales farmers shortly. Also, fish on the menu. We're going to head to the docks while they haul in the catch. That's all coming up. But first up today, let's look at the gun debate and the laws. The Minns government's contentious reforms in the wake of the Bondi massacre have made it through the New South Wales Parliament after a marathon debate. The bill to tighten gun laws gives police extraordinary powers to restrict protests as well. It passed the upper house 18 votes to 8. It split the coalition, the Liberals voting with the government while the Nationals voted against it, along with some Shooters Party and other crossbench MPs. The Greens abstained, saying they backed the laws for backed the moves for stronger gun laws, but the restrictions to the protest was an assault, they said, on democratic rights. But they did move a key amendment tightening access to firearm permits for those with suspected terrorist links. It was the only amendment to be passed with unanimous support across both houses of parliament during the 2 days of the sometime heated debate. Shooters, Fishers, Farmers, MLC, Mark Banasiak argued against the gun changes.
Licensed firearm owners refuse to be your scapegoat, refuse to be the scapegoat for this government's incompetence. They refuse to carry the burden of failures that they did not create. They refuse to be tarred with the same brush as criminals and extremists. The consequences of this bill will not be evenly felt across New South Wales. They will fall hardest on regional outer metropolitan electorates, where firearms are tools of work, land management and community participation. Let me give the House some concrete examples. Barwon. In the electorate of Barwon, properties routinely span tens of thousands of hectares. Travel times between homesteads, paddocks, boundary fences can exceed an hour. Producers in Barwon rely on multiple firearms for wild dog control, along stock routes, feral pig eradication near waterways, humane destruction of injured livestock. Imposing a blanket fall-limit ban in Barwon is not a safety measure, it is an operational failure. A producer from near Bourke explained, when dogs come through, you don't have time to drive back one central safe. You need the right tool where the problem is. These laws are written like the bush doesn't exist.
Meanwhile, a number of Nationals MPs said while they supported parts of the bill dealing with hate speech, protests and terrorism symbols, they couldn't support the proposed changes to gun laws. Here's what Nationals MLC Sarah Mitchell had to say.
As legislators, our job is not to legislate quickly, it is to legislate well, and that is not what has happened in this case. For our farmers, firearms are not a political issue. They are a practical tool. They use them responsibly, they use them lawfully, and they are part of their day-to-day operations. The issue of the cap of 10 firearms. Some people, when you say that here in this parliament or in the community, will say, well, 10 seems like it sounds like enough. And for a lot of farmers, 10 probably would be enough, and I'm happy to acknowledge that. I have spoken to farmers who have said to me, look, I need a few different types of firearms depending on what the purpose is. Some people have two or three, some have six or seven. But particularly if you're out in Western New South Wales on larger properties, there may well be the need for more than 10. There may be a legitimate reason for that. But we don't know that in this House beyond the discussions we've had with individuals who've come to us because no one has had the time or chance to talk about it properly. I also just want to touch on the fact that the government has made the choice to bundle these firearms changes into this broader package. So we're dealing in one bill with hate speech, with illegal assembly, and with firearms changes, despite the fact that these are really different areas of policy.
Nationals MLC Scott Barrett was also concerned the legislation was being rushed through the parliament.
Do we think we'll have a suite of would-be terrorists walk into Waverley Police Station and hand their guns in on Christmas Eve? Is the urgency driven by intelligence to suggest there's a small army of farmers out there ready to enact some sort of wide-scale violence with their granddad's 22s? This is ill-thought-out action designed to do nothing but divert from the many real issues that led to this event and bury guilt and grief with output and action activity rather than any real safety outcomes. If we were serious about looking at gun reforms and implementing things that would make a genuine difference, we would be taking our time on this and properly consider what we are looking at.
That's National's MLC Scott Barrett there in the Parliament. The legislation now goes back to the lower house to be rubber stamped later on this morning. That may well have happened already. President of New South Wales Farmers Association Xavier Martin was in Parliament for the 2 days. He says a number of the gun restrictions are unworkable for farmers. They have unintended consequences, and he hopes the government will see sense and allow some flexibility with the regulations.
Oh, look, 2 days and two nights in the chambers, Michael, I'm pretty sickened by, a bill that was there labelled terrorism 2025, terrorism and related matters. And my members, farmers, are front and centre of a terrorism bill. It's just extraordinary. And so we're deeply disappointed that the New South Wales government has rushed through this whole unworkable dog's breakfast of changes that are just going to burden farmers.
Now, you're talking about some of the issues here. Let's talk about some of those 10 firearms for farmers. We've had a few texts coming into the program saying, why would farmers need any more than 10 guns?
That just demonstrates they're not farmers sending that in, because the reality is by the time you use the right firearm for the right job, whether it's over short or long trajectories, or whether it's a small or large animal, that you do need that range of categories on most farms. And the reality is that many farmers are running separated farms, so they have a different set of firearms in some places, but then similar sets on other farms. And all one of the unintended consequences and just a raft of anomalies is going to mean there's going to be a whole lot more firearms and ammunition racked in vehicles moving between farms because of this nonsense coming out of Macquarie Street this week.
The other requirement is you have to become a member of a gun club. I mean, we've heard already from pastoralists that's unworkable.
Oh, yeah, apparently for our, I'm not sure whether it's our physical or mental or both, but anyway, yeah, all licence holders must be a member of a gun club. I mean, this is the problem with men and women, obviously of goodwill, who, think they're responding to an issue urgently, the optics of it at least, and they actually think they're solving problems, actually making things worse. So quite extraordinary to sit through the ALP and the Liberal Party in lockstep making things worse for farmers.
And they wouldn't listen to any advice.
Oh, look, we offered all last week, with respect around this atrocity. We were the first ones out calling it an atrocity. A whole lot of others were talking about it as being a tragedy. And, Michael, tragedies are they are serious events, but they're disasters and accidents. This was an atrocity. Some were even calling it a concerning event. I mean, just crazy stuff. And these people then think they know how to deal with the problem. Now, the problem, and to give Chris Minns his credit, he has named the beast. He has come out during the week and said this is Muslim extremism. And that's what my members are telling me, Michael, that it's the hate between the ears that's come out of the hate factories in our cities that are then getting transferred into stupid rules, unworkable rules for farmers.
The other issue, two-year renewals, is there any talk of exemption for farmers on that? Because now it's 5 years, isn't it?
Oh, look, when you go through the shopping list of stuff they've got wrong, Michael, that's just one of a couple of truckloads of things we're going to have to work through in the regulations. And look, another matter to give Premier Minns and his ministers credit on was I asked them, you're going to make all my members sitting down for Christmas dinner into criminals if you're not careful. And so at least they're not rushing off to the governor this afternoon to get a cent. So we're going to have, I believe, some months to work through the stupidity of what they've just done and try and get it right.
And you think that might be done by regulation?
Correct. We're already starting to see that, it's just incredible what some of the pollies and their advisors think might actually work in a regulation. So, look, we're starting from a long way back. We already had the world's, arguably the world's toughest gun laws anyway, and now they've just made them tougher but also unworkable. And look, we've got no issue that people in cities around, right around this nation, don't need dozens or hundreds of firearms at home. And that's where the focus should be, on those risks and on that hatred between the ears I referred to. That's where they need to focus. That's the cause. They're flat out dealing with the symptoms out in agricultural landscape when all we're trying to do is go about our business and manage domestic and native and feral animals. I mean, hello, unless Prime Minister Albanese is about to announce that the army is going to take over feral pest control across the nation, we've already got an exploding problem. And if we start hamstringing farmers and recreational hunters, then look out. The feral pigs are going to be roaming down the streets.
And recreational hunters for guns, and that will put some recreational hunters that are involved in control of feral animals, they just won't be involved anymore.
Oh, that's right. They're beside themselves as to what this means for them as law-abiding licence holders.
As well as magazine capacity limits too.
Oh, look, the whole range of things. Look, your program's not long enough to go through that shopping list, or I think I described it as truckloads of problems that are in the legislation. We've just got to take some months, I'd suggest, to get the regulations right before it can go for assent to the governor.
So you'll be talking to Penny Sharp, you'll be talking to Minister Moriarty.
Yeah, and Police Minister Yasmin Catley, and to the Premier. I mean, I think the Premier knows just in his face that he's just playing to the optics. This is just a mad dog's breakfast, Michael.
Well, maybe they should have done better on the intelligence side.
Oh, look, there's a whole lot of matters coming to the fore from this atrocity, the missteps, multiple missteps. And the reality is that my law-abiding members, farmers across this state, have been complying with the rules. The fact that they don't enforce the rules on a whole lot of other people is not a reason to penalise farmers.
Xavier Martin, President of New South Wales Farmers Association. He was in Parliament for the last couple of days as they debated those bills. Got some texts on that. Troy says farmers, fishers, they should drop the fishers and farmers from their name and just call themselves the Shooters Party. And Tony said, Tony from Armidale's texted in saying 4 or 5 caliber is all anyone actually needs to hunt or control feral pests or animals in this country. You might need a heavier caliber for a water buffalo in the Northern Territory. Tony says he owns 7 firearms, of which he uses 3 regularly, 2 are antique and they never get used. You might have some thoughts about that issue, the gun issue, and some of the changes there, the toughening up of the gun issue there. 0467 922 684. Farmers saying it in some cases will be unworkable. They'll need to change some regulations. 0467 922 684. One of the being a member of a gun club. One particular issue that is raising the ire of New South Wales Farmers Association. It's 18 minutes past 12.
The Country Hour. Celebrating 80 years.
Understanding how they grow best.
The Country Hour.
Nourishing the people in their own community.
Part of your community for 80 years.
It's highly regarded.
Weekdays at noon.
Go straight to the source.
On ABC Radio and on the ABC Listen app.
A group representing food manufacturers is calling for a cap on the price of gas, saying a gas reservation scheme announced this week won't be enough to keep the sector viable. The federal government plans to reserve 15 to 25% of Australia's gas for the domestic market. Commencing in 2027, Energy Minister Chris Bowen said the reservation scheme would put downward pressure on prices, but Patrick Roseman is the CEO of Food and Agri Australia and told David Claughton it won't bring down prices far enough.
Our manufacturing sector needs more support than a maybe price reduction in 2027. I think we need to have a lower price confirmed and controlled by the government supporting domestic manufacturing. I'm not convinced that that level of ring fencing of domestic supply is going to be enough to reduce prices. It simply has to be a lower price for manufacturers. The government support other industries. Why can't they support food manufacturing that employs 280,000 Australians?
So you mean a price cap, like a cap on the price of gas?
It needs to happen for the manufacturing sector. Yes, it does. We need a cap on pricing. I know that the big multinationals that are exporting all the gas are making large amounts of money. We need to protect our industry. There's also food security as well. We want to support the industry. We don't want food manufacturing on skinny margins leaving the industry. We want to have a robust food manufacturing sector that enables and supports job growth and also is thriving for exports.
So the workers' union say it's a historic victory for manufacturing and for workers, but you don't think it's going to be enough to enable some key manufacturing industries to survive?
No, I'm not. I think it's not enough. Clearly, it's not enough. As we've spoken previously, there's been significant large increases in the cost of gas. This is a token measure and not supportive enough, and we need to actually invigorate the industry, the manufacturing food industry, not put a band-aid on it.
Now, a number of times over the course of this year, Patrick Roseman, you and I have spoken about a gas reservation scheme, and now the government's delivered it. Why are you not satisfied with that?
Because it's not significant enough. There needs to be more done. If you talk to manufacturers around the country, the amount of cost that they're incurring is just simply too high. And putting a Band-Aid on it with a maybe 15-20% reduction is just simply not good enough, David. We need a robust strategy that's going to significantly reduce the input cost for manufacturers. I mean, the reservation system is a good idea, but maybe a 15-20% reduction when the cost of gas has gone up over 100-200% in some cases, it's a Band-Aid. And we don't need Band-Aids. We need structural change.
So the gas industry and sources in that sector are saying that this policy could risk a collapse in prices and deter investment in new supply. So that would be a bad thing.
Look, there's a significant investment already being made. Those guys are making large amounts of money. I think that's... I don't agree with that statement.
$50 billion, I think, was the income from that sector in the last year or two. And I don't think they pay royalties either.
No, but they're not going to collapse. I mean, I think that's an ridiculous statement.
Which are the most vulnerable areas, do you think? I mean, you speak to manufacturers all over the country. You're traveling as well. You can make comparisons internationally, and so you can get a sense of how Australian manufacturers are competing globally. What do you think are the main risks now?
We're just not competitive, David. The cost of manufacturing in this country, everything's gone up. Labor's gone up, gas has gone up, electricity's gone up. We're just not competitive on the global scale. And we've had a lot of imported food items coming in from around the world where other countries have supported their food manufacturing industry.
Patrick Roseman is the CEO of Food and Agri Australia. Getting more texts on the firearm issue, and Greg's texted in to say 10 guns for an individual property is more than enough. This will cater to the various calibres needed for the different control measures. Talking about wild pigs roaming the streets, attacking people, killing a dog, eating a sheep is irresponsible, crazy rhetoric. Atrocities are increased with the ready availability of guns, says Greg. This country doesn't want to become like the US, where children are gunned down in the street. That one from Greg. But Penny's texted in to say other people determining what's appropriate for farmers is like me forcing surgeons to have a restricted number of tools with which to do their procedures. This knee-jerk reaction will have serious repercussions for rural and regional New South Wales. Steve says the Liberal Party voted alongside Labor for the gun laws, and with Labor against the amendments, we need to look at marginal seats and vote accordingly. The draconian new regulations would have made no difference to the Bondi massacre, as it was a failure of police and government to remove firearms under existing laws. and the new laws will only further bog down police with paperwork. This one from Scott says, I'm new to firearms myself. I can see four rifles in various calibres can do the job in feral animal reduction. And he's also wondering why people in Sydney, as it's been reported, need 200-plus guns, says Scott. So that's just some of the text coming through on that issue. You can always send us a text, 0467 922 684.
The Country Hour.
We exported the largest volume of lobster.
Celebrating 80 years.
Isn't that quite exciting?
The Country Hour.
Get up.
Part of your community.
Fight the bullet.
And your life.
Keep moving.
For 80 years on ABC Radio.
Well, fishermen have been out in their boats hauling in the seafood that will grace many families' Christmas lunch tables tomorrow. Kim Honan headed out to the high seas. But before she did that, she headed out to the wharf and spoke to John Joblin, who is a commercial fisherman.
It has been a busy couple of days getting everything prepared, yes.
Yeah, and you've been out on the trawler. You brought some spanner crabs in yesterday, I believe, and you've got another trawler coming in this morning.
Yes, we had some spanner crabs and snapper yesterday, and today the trawler's just coming up the river now, and it's got some fresh king prawns, and yesterday morning it had some fresh school prawns. So, you know, there's a nice variety of prawn around.
Wow, that sounds absolutely delicious. So how many spanner crabs did you bring in?
We had about 150 kilos.
Have you got a good recipe for spanner crabs? What do you do with them?
Oh, Jules put some, we put them on the barbecue, we clean them, we take the shell off and we put them in alfoil and put garlic butter on them, and we just put them in the barbecue and we steam them in the barbecue for about 25 minutes and they come up absolutely beautiful with the garlic butter.
Yeah, and how many prawns do you reckon are coming in on the trawler? It's just started raining, starting to get a little heavy here at the moment.
Oh, I don't know what they've caught, but yep. The night before they had about 80 kilos, so if they've got 80 kilos, at least it's a bit of fresh stuff for everyone.
Yeah, fresh stuff here at the co-op. People are starting to line up this morning, bringing in their eskies. Look, I've got my esky here as well, ready to stock up. So the freshest that you can get, really.
Oh, it is the freshest you can get straight off the boat, and yeah, no, it's beautiful.
Yeah, and how's the season been for you, John?
Prawn season this year's been pretty good. Spanner crab season last year was very well, and snapper's been all right this year as well, so no, this season's been pretty good.
Yeah, and catching any snapper for Christmas?
Yeah, no, we had a few snapper there yesterday, so, you know, it's been reasonable.
Yeah, that's another great, nice option for the Christmas table, a bit of snapper, maybe fried or baked.
Yeah, no, I like it fried, but, yeah, no, a nice baked snapper for Christmas would be good, and it's local fish, so why not stick local?
Yeah, and it's been a tough a couple of weeks, I guess, for the prawn fishermen in the Clarence, the Evans and the Ballina, Richmond rivers with the five-year ban on selling green prawns out of this biosecurity zone. What sort of impact has that had on you, if any?
Well, no, we've got a river endorsement to go prawn fishing in the Richmond River, and my brother's got one over at the Clarence, and well, it's just decimated it. We've got no fishery at all now, so we won't even be able to go because it's a bait prawn market. There's no we could probably only cook prawns for about a month a year, so the whole market's just gone now, so that whole fishery's just more or less wiped out.
Yeah, so obviously not interested in selling cooked schoolies.
Well, they're not big enough
to
cook. Like, people whinge about when they're large because they're too hard to peel. So when they're what they call a number two, people don't want to do it. It's too much work. They're too small. Yeah. Whereas when they're green, they can roll them in flour, deep fry them, and people like eating them as tappers or just as a green prawn for bait.
Mm. And there is a bit of a zone which extends into the ocean, but that doesn't affect you?
No, we can't. We have to cook prawns up to Lennox Head, half a mile out to sea. Well, that's wrecked our bait market out there as well, because if there's a big glut of prawn around, we've got to cook them now, and we can only sell 300 kilos. You can only catch 300 kilos, whereas if we could get 700 or 800, we'd cook our cooked orders and then green the rest, whereas now we can't do that. So, no, it's affected the trawlers at sea as well.
Yeah, and so the state government has offered $4.5 billion for fishers who want to exit the industry. Will you get any buyout money with that?
No, the people in the Richmond had a little bit of money given to them there a couple of months ago, but no, the New South Wales fisheries have done absolutely nothing for the Richmond River with the fish kills and helping the river or anything like that, which is a bit of a shame because the Richmond River prawn fishery was a huge fishery 20 years ago, and it's a shame that New South Wales fisheries haven't helped us along the way trying to fix the river up and fix Tucky Ann Swamp and fix up the river at Bungawalbin and all that, just trying to get the river better quality.
Oh, well,
but no, they've done nothing.
Now, also at the wharf, Kim Honan also spoke to Im McRae, who's the Ballina Fishermen's Co-op CEO, about just how busy it's been.
You've been pretty busy, flat out, these last few days, Ian.
Yes, very busy indeed, yeah.
Yeah, and how much produce do you reckon you will sell here through the co-op?
Tonnage-wise?
Yeah, tons. Do you have a...
It's got to be up around the 5 ton, I'd say. Nice.
Yeah, and is that on sort of par with last year?
Hopefully we're going to go better this year, yeah. We're hoping to go better all the time, yeah.
And this is by far your biggest day of the year.
Yeah, I mean, Easter's good to us as well, and holiday times are really good as well. You know, we appreciate everybody coming in at those times of the years and buying the seafood from us here at the Ballina Fishermen's Co-op, yeah.
Yeah, so we mentioned the prawns coming in, the snapper, the spanner crabs. Yep. What else have you got in there that people are lining up for
today?
Oh,
we've got oysters, bugs, other kinds of crabs and crustaceans as well. So all types of fish. You know, it's not just snapper. There's barramundi, salmon. There's a couple of other different types of snapper as well that we have. All sorts, basically. there's lots to choose from.
And it is a big day. The doors opened here at 5 o'clock and it has started raining, so people are now coming in with their eskies and their umbrellas to pick up their seafood orders or, you know, get the fresh catch coming in today.
Yep. Yeah, you know, it's really good. It seems really good this morning. There's plenty of cars coming in the car park. Plenty of car parks down here to pick from, so plenty of room for everybody to get a park and nice and close, and you're out of the rain.
Yeah, and we're pretty much in the shadows of the big prawn here. Do you reckon that attracts a lot of people into town to get their seafood?
Oh, without a doubt. You know, that's what people talk about, you know. The shop used to be underneath the prawn, you know, and there used to be a little shop underneath there years and years ago, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, you know, that hasn't been for some time, but, obviously, holiday makers, you know, come here and they like the big prawn and they come here for holiday in this time of the year, especially from Queensland, you know.
Yeah, and what's on your barbecue tomorrow for Christmas?
We'll keep it nice and simple. We'll probably keep it prawns and a little bit of fish, I'd say.
Yeah, and have you seen any impact on, you know, the ban on green prawns in the Richmond, Evans and...
Well, like John said, you know, it does hinder those people and obviously we don't see that product come across our scales, which is, you know, part of our livelihood. The more product we get across our scales, you know, obviously the more money we make at the Ballina Fishermen's Co-op. It does hinder. Obviously we're more worried about the families that have got those licenses that can't work and haven't worked for some time, but we'd just like to see them get back to work and we'd like to obviously see the river cleaned up.
Ian McRae is a Ballina Fishermen's Cooperative CEO, and with white spot disease still a problem for prawns, some good news on another disease front. Kim Honan caught up with John Larson at Ausfish about the Richmond River Oyster Project, and he says that the QX variety, the QX resistant variety of Sydney rock oysters, is being harvested and it's looking good. He says he hopes they'll continue to breed up on the north coast and we may see them commercially available as early as next year.
It's an intensely interesting project with what's happening on the Richmond with oysters. We do definitely have a variation of the Sydney rock oyster. It's the same DNA. It's not something different in DNA. It's the same DNA as Sydney rock, Cycostria glomerata, but there is a variation and nature has stepped in. The oyster can react to changes in environmental conditions on a specific waterway, and that's exactly what's happening here in the Richmond, given the poor water quality, the consistent poor water quality that we have. So nature has stepped in and changed this oyster at the genomics level, and now it is resistant to QX disease, but not just QX disease, but to other just you know, poor environmental conditions, and it's been able to survive. So it's starting to grow. That's the good news. We've been supplying a hatchery on Phillip Island in Victoria with brood stock of this new strain, and the good news is it's been going out to oyster growers on the east coast of Australia.
So Macleay, Hastings and Port Stephens.
Correct. Yeah. Specifically, and we just talked about this yesterday, I discussed with one of the spokespeople for this new oyster, Brandon Armstrong, who was a spokesperson for the industry. He's out of Camden Haven.
Yeah.
And he told me yesterday that they're actually harvesting the new...
That is so exciting. Yes. So 18 months in,
absolutely.
They're already harvesting.
Yep. And it's been a slow growth on the east coast of Australia. We've had phenomenally low growth because of the lack of the right algae for the oysters as well. So anyway, this year, the latter part of this year, they've taken off. Here in the Richmond, we're seeing good growth on this new variation of oyster. And Brendan was telling us that they're now harvesting, as of 2 weeks ago, harvesting this new oyster with great results as well.
Oh, so if you're lucky, you might get hold of a new Richmond River oyster for Christmas in your batch. Is
next,
it marketing?
Next year, yeah. We certainly, there's one grower left on the Richmond River, and he really didn't think he would have enough stock this year, so he's not really set up to sell or to harvest. But next year, definitely, when all of the particulars, the parameters are in place for New South Wales Food Authority and the depuration, purification plans and everything else that goes with it, that'll be in place for next year.
That's really exciting. And it so and are we looking at seeing those oysters spread to other estuaries across the state?
Yes. It'll be up to the oyster growers to approach the hatcheries for brooder for spat, the young juvenile spat that was developed or bred from Richmond River broodstock.
That's John Larson from Oilsfish talking about the Richmond River Oyster Project, about that QX-resistant variety of Sydney Rock Oyster, hopefully available next year. It's 25 minutes to one here on the Country Hour. Time to find out what's happening with the weather details for today and for the next week or so. Alenka Jumar's there. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Michael.
So a few showers around, not too much, and not particularly hot either.
Yeah, that's right. So we are seeing the end of that heat wave period that we have experienced over the last sort of 3 to 5 days across the state. Today is probably the warmest day on the coast, at least for the next probably at least week. And inland areas have already started to see those temperatures dropping. So we are still expecting today, as you mentioned, some showers and thunderstorms across the northeastern parts of the coast as a trough still lingers across that part of the state today and into tomorrow. And some of those thunderstorms may become severe during the afternoon today and also tomorrow and bring the risk of some damaging winds, large hail and also heavy bursts of rain. And we have seen some storms over the last couple of days producing quite significant rainfall. But these are expected to remain fairly isolated and localised and probably more likely closer to the Queensland border.
Right, so right up in the north there. And a couple of days ago, Byron got 200 millimetres. So, you know, it's a bit hit and miss, but you're not expecting to see that sort of volume of rain again.
No, that's right. That was, quite an isolated location right on the coast. There is just the wrong place at the wrong time, unfortunately, for residents of Byron. However, we could still see some moderate falls. We could possibly up to 50 to 90 millimetres, as we've seen over the last couple of days with some of those slower moving storms during today and tomorrow. Not expecting that 150 to 200 millimetres that we did see two nights ago.
And what about the inland? Any rain for the inland?
Look, unfortunately, inland, we're sort of heading into a little bit of a drier period. We have a fairly strong high-pressure system over the Bight, which is extending a ridge across the state, and that's bringing really settled and dry weather to most inland parts and across the south as well as the west. And with that high pressure system, we've also seen those system push out that heat, as I mentioned earlier. So we are expecting below average temperatures, both daytime and overnight temperatures, over the next several days into at least Saturday or Sunday, and then we'll start to see those temperatures climbing up once again in the early next week or later on during Sunday or early next week as the next trough approaches from the west.
Okay, so and extended period of warmer weather, do you think, or what are we looking at?
From next week, look, at this stage it looks like we'll see some, probably the first half of next week, a little bit warmer than average over the inland areas. Not quite as hot as we saw this week. We're not expecting those severe heatwave conditions, but potentially low-intensity heatwave conditions are on the cards for inland areas in the first half of next week. At this stage, not expecting too much rainfall, but a trough is expected on Wednesday, which might bring some isolated showers and some generally gusty thunderstorm activity is what we're seeing at the moment for New Year's Eve. But we'll just continue to monitor that. It will really depend on that system and whether it slows down or speeds up. But at this stage, not looking like bringing too much rainfall.
But in the next couple of days, rainfall mainly on the coast, and if it's going to be heavier, it'll be in the north coast or right up on the north coast near to Queensland. That's more likely.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, we'll see some coastal showers with that ridging pushing up along the coast. So really for anywhere along the coast, we're looking at a cool and slightly showery, but not too bad. We're talking a couple of millimetres in most areas of the coast, apart from that far northeast.
Alenka, thanks for that.
Thanks very much, Michael.
It's 20 minutes to one.
You're listening to The Country Hour.
On ABC Radio New South Wales.
Hello, I'm Annie Guest. Join me for The World Today. Contentious laws pass. New South Wales Parliament rushed through after the Bondi terror attack. Disturbing details from the Epstein files put the spotlight back on former Prince Andrew. And the Christmas rush is underway. Parts of the country prepare to swelter, while others can expect snow. Those stories and more coming up on The World Today at lunchtime.
But here on The Country, we're getting quite a few texts about the gun laws, and we've got one from Vin at Umina, who says, sounds like some very small number of exemptions may be required in the scheme of things. Best to put some tough laws in place and address the smaller exemptions during the next stage. Vin says, calm your farm, folks. Dave in Condobolin differs to that. He says, Merry Christmas to myself and to Dave everyone else on The Country Hour, saying, tightening gun laws will do nothing but promote the illegals firearm trade, which is already flourishing. Another person's texted in to say firearms reform is absolutely ridiculous. I've been at Louth, only just arriving home yesterday. I was there for 9 days and have been assisting on a property for 37 years, culling feral animals. He says, I've killed 63 pigs. He uses 5 different firearms, which are all used for different methods, and he certainly uses a small caliber firearm for killing stock such as sheep. So he says the reforms are ridiculous. Bob in Hay says to all the politicians, when you go to Christmas dinner, the legislation will not be easy on your conscience. He says, shame for attacking licences and for shooters. He said they should have acted on the terrorists and kept us safe. That one from Bob in Hay. And, there's a whole bunch of more texts that I might try and get to some of them a little bit later on in the program. It's coming up to 18 minutes to one.
The New South Wales Country Hour with Michael Condon on ABC Radio New South Wales.
Well, the Riverina in southern New South Wales has long been known as one of Australia's major food bowls, and with Christmas fast approaching, that reputation was on full display at a local farmer's market. Reporters Cara Jeffrey and Justina Basta went along to the Wagga Wagga market to find out a little bit more.
This festive season, the Riverina Producers Market is busy as shoppers make their final decisions about what will end up on the Christmas table. For many, it is a balance between cost of living pressures and the desire to buy fresh, locally produced food. Ashley Carrig from Hillview Farms in Batlow says buying direct from growers helps keep prices reasonable while maintaining quality.
So my partner and I own and run Hillview Farms. We own a farm in Batlow and a retail store in Adelong. And we have been at the growers' market now for the last 6 weeks. And we grow a range of different things on our farm. We've got pumpkins, cherry tomatoes, cucumbers, zucchinis, watermelons. And we work with a lot of other local farms since we've moved down here. So we bought the farm 14 years ago, and then we were always living in Sydney. But we started doing farmers' markets in Sydney, initially with just what we were growing. That turned into what our neighbours were growing, and then my partner went searching for other farms, like towards Sydney, Gundagai, and then the outskirts of Sydney. And then the markets turned into a website where we do home delivery all over Sydney. COVID hit, the market stopped, our online orders went to 3,000 a week. It was madness. Anyway, April this year, we pulled the pin on Sydney. Our son's 9 and we just wanted to move for a quieter life. And so we moved down to the farm full time and opened the retail store in Adelong in June. Being that we are farm direct, like we're working directly with growers, it's cutting out that middleman. So things aren't extraordinarily expensive, and the quality is just so much better. The taste, like, that's why people keep coming back again and again. I mean, it just tastes better.
Ms Carrick says summer fruit has been particularly popular in the lead up to Christmas.
The stone fruit, cherries, peaches, nectarines, the apricots here are selling particularly well.
When it comes to Christmas essentials, she says there is one clear favourite.
Absolutely cherries. The cherries are spectacular. Whether they're from young, out along Batlow, you can't get better.
Batlow apple and cherry grower Greg Mowat says the season has delivered high quality fruit despite dry conditions.
Well, we've only just started picking cherries in the last 10 days. The crop this year is outstanding. It's one of those years where everything's come together. It is a dry year, but generally in dry years we grow better fruit. So this year's coming off. Great crop.
Mr Mowat says Batlow's climate plays a key role in fruit quality.
It's an ideal growing climate. It's got altitude, it's got cool nights, warm days instead of really hot days like we're getting here in Wagga today. So it's a great climate for growing really high quality fruit.
He says demand has remained strong heading into Christmas.
We tend to sell most of what we grow ourselves, so we're not reliant on the Sydney market. So our demand is always very good. We've been doing it for a long time, and dare I say it, we have a bit of a reputation for growing, you know, some good quality fruit. So we tend to get a lot of return business, and people are looking out for our product.
Mr Mowat says the Riverina offers a wide range of high-quality produce.
Citrus coming out of the out around Leeton and Griffith is always an outstanding product. There's so much really high-quality beef and lamb that's grown in this region. It used to be many years ago there were a lot more vegetables produced along the Murrumbidgee River, but not so much anymore. But a lot of olives, there's strawberries growing here in Wagga that are really high quality. I just think it's a great region. It's a very safe region climatically. And I think as a result of that, you've got farmers that have been plying their trade for many, many years, and they're doing it very, very well. I think it's very underrated.
At the meat stalls, producers say Christmas favourites like ham are selling fast. Vendor Jason Bates, who farms at Stock and Bingle and also owns a butchery in Cootamundra, explains more.
Our main product we produce is we grow pigs outdoors on pasture, and they're all heritage breed, pasture-aged Hampshire and Berkshire pigs. Then we also grow chickens outdoors on pasture, a bit of grass-fed beef and grass-fed lamb. But our main thing is pork and chicken at the markets here, and it's our first full week or second full week here at the markets. Yeah. The hams are going pretty good. Can't beat pork. There's chicken over here, and we got a bit of chook as well. There's plenty of good things just in this market, but plenty to find locally.
Mr Bates says they do not compete with major supermarkets on price.
I guess what we'd say is we don't compete at all. Because we're not comparing apples with apples. So everything we do costs us a lot more to produce. There's a lot more labour hours involved, and we've got to look after our people a lot better. That costs money, and to look at an animal every day costs money. So we do that. We don't falter from what we want to do and our beliefs and how we run our animals to try and save a dollar. And our customers will come to us over the big chains, because that's what they want as well.
He says transparency matters to customers.
The produce has to be better, but also the story behind it needs to be true the whole way through. And that's why transparency is massive. And like, our farm's right on a road. People can come to the farm. People have come to the farm, chefs and other butchers and such. So making sure that the product that is sold here matches what it says on the board or on the label. And then it will taste better and people will come back.
For shoppers, buying local is about quality and trust. Penny Scott from Canoundra, who was visiting Wagga Wagga, says farmers markets allow direct connection with growers.
I can look the growers in the eye. I can ask all those questions about how the products have been grown, how the piggies might have been raised in the paddock, how the chickens have been plucked. I can get down to that fine detail to know about animal welfare and also the methods and the care that go into raising all these beautiful animal products.
She says supporting farmers means looking beyond price.
Might be pricing, but the quality is nothing like what you can get here. It's not about scale. It's about the care at low volume and higher quality. So there's an economic paradigm in here as well. I'm not about cheap food. I have been a farmer, small-scale farmer, and to make a living, an equitable living, you actually need to include so many more of the externalities in the pricing of your food than what you ever get in supermarkets, who are just about to make a profit. They don't care what it is. They will just sell what they can to make a profit.
Another shopper, Joanne Wilson from The Rock, says health and longevity matter to her.
I'll go as healthy as I can go with really good quality produce. So I bought fruit and veg from here 2 weeks ago. We're just finishing off and it's still fresh, whereas the supermarket stuff goes off so quickly.
As Christmas approaches, many shoppers say supporting local farmers is worth it. Penny Scott says it comes down to values.
If we want to support farmers, we avoid the supermarket system. We come to farmers' markets, we can buy online, we can support the smaller independent supermarkets who seem to have a little more flavour and taste about what they will have in their supermarkets. It's not about volume, it's about quality.
That was Penny Scott from Canoundra, ending that report from Cara Jeffrey with some additional reporting from Justina Baster. On the Country Hour, it's 9 minutes to 1.
The Country Hour, part of your community and your life.
It's nostalgic.
For 80 years.
Hanging out with my brothers in the back of a ute.
The Country Hour.
They just naturally grow a beautiful shape.
Celebrating 80 years of telling rural stories on ABC Radio.
Well, the owner of a Mid-North Coast distillery says interest in small batch alcohols is growing in Australia at the Maria River Distillery north of Port Macquarie. Business is said to be booming in the lead up to Christmas, but owner and distiller Brandon Santee said it's part of a broader trend as Australians look to fresh flavours in their drinks. He told Lauren Bohane how he first got into this industry.
We're over overseas on a family holiday in about 2014. My father's family is from Northern Italy and Trieste and Slovenia. And we went over there just to obviously go to Amalfi Coast and Rome and run around everywhere, and really fell in love with afternoons over the Amalfi with limoncello and a few nightcaps. And it was great fun, absolutely great fun. Riding Ducatis, doing all sort of jazz. Everything you're supposed to do in Rome. When I came back to Australia, so how do we keep the dream alive, you know? And so that was really trying to, you know, buy Vespers and find limoncello, and just couldn't find any decent limoncello in Sydney. And so that set off the quest. How do we make alcohol? Learn how to make your own ferments, distill the product down, make alcohol for limoncello, and then how to make limoncello itself. And that was the beginning of the crazy journey we've been on, yeah.
Because you're not just making limoncello now. You've got a whole heap of products.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so limoncello was the first one. That's what really sort of got me into the game. Being an old rum drinker, it's like, well, if we can make limoncello, let's have a go at some rum. And then Mum piped in and was like, well, if you've got these two, why can't you make me gin? You know, classic. And that was really, that's where I disappeared down a rabbit hole. Well, when you start making gin, that's when you really start experimenting with different oils and construction methods, and you really get into that distilling process, that little bit of alchemy. You know, it's like getting a passion for cooking. And that was it for me. Once you get into that, it's like, right, here we go. Now I know what I want to do when I grow up, you know?
We're in the lead up to Christmas now. I imagine this is a pretty busy time of year for you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. For us, it starts with things like the Italian festivals and that, and Ferragosto in your October period, you know, and then it just keeps ramping up towards Christmas. And last weekend and this weekend are crazy. Yeah, we do a lot of work in farmers markets or produce markets or festivals, event markets.
Do you think there's a lot of opportunity for small-scale producers like yourself in the industry?
I think it's absolutely ripe for that. Yeah, I think when people understand the fermentation side of things, and when people understand, for instance, where we are here in Maria River, we have a very similar humidity and period above sea level to Ireland, and a lot of the whiskies over there. Obviously, places like Tasmania don't get humidity twice a year. They only really get it once, whereas we get it twice here. So there's things where you can look at how barrels breathe. Then there's, why aren't we making barrels out of some of Australian woods, or why aren't we, you know, doing things with dark spirits in that, you know, that area. And I think that's where, you know, we're going to get the next influx of people into the distilling game are really going to be looking at this going, hold on a sec, I can make a living and I can have a little business where I'm making specialised products, you know, whatever it is, 500,000 bottles a year or whatever you're doing, and really have something that you can be very passionate about, but also very niche, you know. And I think that's the, you know, as I say, we don't need another bottle of Shiraz in Australia, yet there's still some Shirazes that are coming out which are fantastic, you know. And that's winemakers who really understand what they're trying to put out as a product, and I think that's going to happen in the distilling game.
And I suppose from a consumer angle, do you think that interest is growing in this smaller scale, in that niche, those niche products?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely the seasonal activity. I wouldn't call it like a fashion trend, but the want to explore, certainly in the younger generations, is wonderful. You know, there is so much desire to try different cocktails. You know, if you went back 20, 25 years ago, you might have 6 different beers that you've tried in your life, you know. And now there's cocktails everywhere. There's all sorts of different spritzers, and everyone's just having a great time with mixing different alcohols and things together. And I think that naturally pushes back to the distillery or the engine room of these things. That's where the creativity's kind of comes through. I think, you know, part of it will be, yes, you'll be able to go and buy a mainstream brand of vodka or gin 24/7, but then there'll be smaller distilleries that'll go, guys, I've just made, you know, 1,000 bottles of this, get amongst it, buy online, get it, and then it's gone, you know, and it may never come back again. It may just because at that point in time they had the right set of botanicals, or they had the, you know, somebody gave them a bag of, I don't know, chopped anchovies. I don't know. Who knows what these people are going to come up with, you know? But, yeah, I can see that. And I think consumers really want that.
That's Maria River distillery owner and distiller Brandon Santee, and he was speaking there to Lauren Bohane. It's 1:03 on the Country Hour. Getting some more texts on the gun laws. Peter at Orange says the new gun laws are an abomination. He's a member of a hunting club. He says many of our members live in the Sydney metro area, but they visit country farms to help out with pest control, particularly pigs and foxes. He says such volunteers will be severely impacted, as many of the firearms they use, lever and pump action rifles, will be reclassified as C-class, which means they'll only be available to farmers, not to mention the rule there about only 4 firearms are allowed if you're not a farmer. So the New South Wales Farmers Association looking to some of the regulations for some changes there, softening down of some of those gun laws in regards to agriculture. It's 1:02.
80 years of the Country Hour.
We need a historian. Jenny Bailey's actually written the book.
Yes, I did, for the 50th anniversary. A lot of the earlier rural reporters were still alive at that stage. I was able to sit down with them and gather all that history that would have been lost if we'd waited till 80 years.
Farmers and those in their small communities, they let us into their lives at the very best and the very worst times.
It's a very special role to have as a rural reporter. We are special within the ABC, and we're seen that way by the listeners. They do feel like they know us, and they really do connect with us in a very special way. So when we ask people to ring up about rainfall or, you know, whatever, they all ring in because they know us. When I was a rural reporter, we just cared so much about what we were doing. We cared so much about the farmers that were listening to us and supporting them through those ups and downs, the droughts, the floods. It's wonderful we're still doing that now.
The Country Hour, celebrating 80 years of telling rural stories.
Yes, indeed, a significant anniversary this year. Just a bit of housekeeping, letting you know that, in fact, the Country Hour, No Country Hour tomorrow, or on Boxing Day, and no Raw Reports as well. But we'll be back in the lunch hour in the cricket. We'll have a full hour program, though, on the digital stream online for Monday and Tuesday, and any of the other lunch break in the cricket. We'll have the full hour program on the digital streaming if you want to listen to that. But during the cricket, on the analog, on the radio, we'll be there during the lunch break for about 25 or 30 minutes with the usual news, weather and information in the lunch hour in the cricket, and the full hour, as I said, on the digital stream, so you can check it out there on the ABC Listen app. It's coming up to news time.